So what I would like to do is just to take a little time with you this morning, just to give the general overview. You will have heard these instructions in various ways during the morning, and I'll engage in just, if I may, a little repetition and the significance of the meditations. So initially, emphasis was given to, of course, to the posture and also to the mindfulness of breathing. And with the mindfulness of breathing, it's the directing of the attention, the mindfulness, to the specific object, namely the breath. And in turning the attention to the breath, a connection, a communication, a relationship is established. When there are a successive number of connections with the breath, it's contributing to samadhi, that means to concentration. With the relationship to the breath, also it contributes to concentration, it contributes to the reduction of stress, to the relaxation of the body, and to the presence of the particular. We also, it's a very good practice for insight, since each breath arises, stays, and passes. So it serves as an important training for the mind to really begin to see and understand the simple truths of life, one of which is the arising, the staying, and the passing. That understanding, as it gets deeper into the being, then comes to give us support in our daily life, where there are situations where we really need to be clear about the arising, the staying, and the passing, with sensitivity and clarity rather than clinging and holding on to and all the fears and agitations that go with it. Mindfulness of breathing also reminds us as well of the immediate connection we have with the environment. We are drawing in the air element into the being, and then releasing it out and drawing it in and releasing it out. So it's not a detachment from the world around, but it's a confirmation of our interconnectedness via the breath. All of that, we wish that clarity and understanding to go deep inside of us, so that we remember the importance of the capacity to concentrate on what matters, to be mindful of the event, to appreciate the changes that are coming and going, and also a reminder of the connectedness. And so as the Buddha commented, of all the varieties of meditations, he said he regarded this as the most important for all the benefits that human beings can draw from one meditation practice, as well as contributing to great inner depth, using the mindfulness of breathing to go deeply. Meditations expanded as well, and in the expansion of the meditations, time was given to mindfulness of the body. In connection with the body, that can be, at times, the whole of the body. In the relationship to the whole of the body, that includes from, pardon me, head down to toes. In the relationship to the body, the teachings are to see body as body. Rather an important statement here in the teachings. And to see body as body is to see it as it, and witness as it actually is. Therefore, the seeing of the body is the seeing of it in terms of elements, DNA, organic life, a formation in the nature, to see it and experience it as vibrations and sensations, as pulsations, to see it in terms of its size, shape, form, there, but particularly as organic nature, as elemental nature in this great field of causation. That means causes brought that about. This shift is a shift from seeing the body as me, as who I am, and as myself. So there's some distinction there. So sometimes we say, we speak or act as if I am the body. So we might say at times, I am sitting here. The eye has no power to sit. The body sits. It's the body which has the formation, it's the body which is sitting. Sometimes we think of the body as me. And so the eye lands with the body, and we say, well, this is me, this is who I am. And the me is landing with the physical. Sometimes it changes yet again, and the body is a possession. My body, my arm, my leg. So the I, the me, and the my land in relationship to the body. And teachings are saying, can we experience, connect with the physical life, as nature, and reduce the I, me, and my? And part of the reason for that, if we see the body rather narrowly as I, me, and my, it builds up lots of projections. There's all the self-images that we have, all the approvals and the disapprovals about the body or parts of the body. All of that shows the identification and the excess of it with the body. So learning to see the body as organic life, there isn't any detachment. It's not a coldness nor an indifference, but actually learning to see the body as nature, as the great field of activity that's going on, will bring out of us care, respect, support, sensitivity, responsibility with diet, with exercise, with the way we use the body, its application. So when the I, me, and mine, all that pressure on the body and the stress that it generates is coming out of the picture of consciousness or mindfulness, then the respect for the body and this extraordinary event of physical life gets clearer to us. The second aspect of the mindfulness of body is particularly with parts of the body. And what I have in mind here, at times, there's pain, sometimes quite strong and intense pain. That pain may be due, essentially, to the posture. And quite often we know that we're experiencing some pain in the posture. There we put our attention into the painful region. That quietly, not forcefully, noticing the pain, where it's strong, where it's weak, above the pain, beneath the pain, the sides of the pain, really seeing subtleties of change in the pain. Pain's not a constant phenomena. And therefore, the various changes, our calm, clear practice will help with those changes. And sometimes we can quietly work through the pain. If the pain is too intense, if it feels intense, if it feels it's now a battle of trying to control the pain, we see that's going on. We feel the pressure of it. We change the posture. We don't make it a strong endurance test. We change the posture. And then the pain may well dissolve quite quickly with the view to returning back to the original posture. Part of the reason for this is that sometimes in life there are painful experiences, in this case the physical ones there, and we need to find ways to work with it. As the Buddha says, pain in the body is an arrow. It's like a hit by the arrow. When the mind is fighting the pain, fearful of the pain, and in struggle with the pain, he said, it's another arrow. It's an arrow in the mind now. So there's lots of pain to deal with. It can be in the sitting posture specifically that we haven't realized the pressure which is building up in the time of the sitting. And one of the indications of that is the gong goes at the end of the sitting, and just before the gong goes, one's feeling so much pain in the body and struggling with it and hanging on for grim death. for the sitting, and some, even though they don't believe in God, start praying to the God they don't believe in. And then the gong goes, and upon hearing the gong, one would have thought it's got some huge magical qualities to it. And people look at the body, and then they relax, and suddenly, without changing the posture, all the pain is gone. So that wasn't physical. The gong has no power to end your pain. I mean, I wish it would. I'd be ringing it all the time. So sometimes it's not easy to know what's physical, what's psychological, and what's the combination of the two together. Not easy to know. So we work with some of the, and then some of the pain that arises is because of the physical condition. Got nothing to do with sitting, walking, standing, or reclining. So sometimes there are, for a number of you, I know, some specific health issues. And that can be from sickness, it can be from injury, from accident, from circumstances of life and birth and much, much else. And therefore, one knows in those times that the changing of the posture may not make any difference. There is pain during the posture. When changes the posture, there is still painful feelings. And sometimes in the construction, the formation, that means in Pali the samkara, the formation of the body, it isn't easy to live with pain. And some of you, smaller number, much smaller number, sometimes are experiencing a continuity and a regularity of pain. It's very easily and understandable to for feelings of concern or stress or worry to develop because of that specific pain. It is important to remember pain is in time and place, and generally speaking is in a specific location. Even in the body, one might have a back pain or a stomach pain or a headache or pain in the knees or whatever. But the other parts and areas of the body, there may be a complete absence of any pain. So part of our practice with the painful experiences is to acknowledge and work with them, but equally to recognize the non-painful areas so that one's not inflaming the painful area. One's got a larger perspective. So we engage in the breath meditation, we engage in mindfulness of body, learning to see it clearly as elements, with care and respect. We engage in looking at the painful areas of the body and working with those and seeing, as I just said, in the larger picture. The inner life also, and with the inner life there, the area of feelings, general states of mind and thoughts are clearly important because they're the means, the instrument for us to know ourselves, to know the world. Things pass through that. So taking just as general states of mind there, it's genuinely very helpful for us to be as clear as possible what is the state of mind. So in the discourse of the Buddha, he makes references to about eight dyads, as they call, or polarities. So to be really, really clear, the mind which is wanting, wanting in its unhealthy aspect, is wanting in which I am dependent on the outcome. To really be clear, this is the wanting mind. To be equally clear, this is a mind which in this moment, in this time, doesn't have any wanting in it. This is the mind which is negative, blaming, fault-finding, agitated, being judgmental towards oneself or towards others. Being clear that's taking place, exploring that. We touched upon that with a good inquiry yesterday evening. Being equally clear, as the Buddha said. This is the mind, I mean feeling, state of mind, this is the state of mind which currently has no blame in it, no fault finding in it in this moment, no negativity in it. If we get to know the absence of, we'll be able to find it more easily. This is the mind which is, the word in the Pali is moha, so that includes, it's an umbrella concept, fear, stress, worry, anxiety, confusion, all of that. This is the mind experiencing this state of mind. This is happening. And then equally, and to remember, and to be equally clear about, this is a state of mind which has no fear, worry, stress, anxiety in it. So that we get to know the absence of, really appreciate and recognize the truth of the absence of, and recognize and acknowledge where there is the unhelpful presence of, the greed, the negativity, the fearfulness or the confusion. To really be clear about that and to work with that, knowing that we also know the absence of anyway. It's not like the absence of is unfamiliar, but we forget it. At times, in the feeling life as well, there can be mega-size eruptions, and particularly the emotional eruptions that can take place. These emotional eruptions that happen genuinely have enormous movement to them, and they overwhelm consciousness. We feel we're drowning in our emotions and in our feelings. And when there's a strong movement inside of us, then outwardly, in this case the body, may well have to respond and take full notice of that, because it's too big a contrast between telling ourselves, I should sit through this, while there's a powerful wave of stuff and issues and story and drama surfacing. And therefore it might well be necessary to get out of the posture. If one can, one might go to a standing posture to let things flow up and down. If necessary, one goes outside and walks. If necessary, one goes out and does yoga, dances, moves the energy through so that the emotional life itself is in some harmony with the physical, because the physical is in movement and the body is in movement, and that might harmonize it together. That is not the answer, final answer, obviously, nor the resolution, but it's a way of working with what is present. And when that wave is over, and it will be over, nothing can last. That when it is over and one feels a bit more relaxed and clear and, say, not upset, not drowning in grief or agitation, then you turn your attention back. What led up to this? What is it that I didn't see? What is it that I was wanting? What were the demands on myself and other? What's this story about which is having such an impact on me? What's a really fresh way to look at it so that I'm not building up such a drama that explodes upon me? So the quiet questioning, when it's gone quiet, in those times when it says the absence of there, is not just to rush off or move quickly away from that intense story or event, but rather to reflect. What can I see here? What do I need to understand here? What actually needs to change? And from what comes clear, it may only be one or two points, from that leads to the action. When there's an intensity of drama and pain with us, sometimes we need the humility, and the humility, as one expression is, I cannot handle this. And that's where the love and the kindness and the good counsel of other women and men who perhaps have known these experiences, have worked through them, have some understanding of them, their good voice. We should not think that we should be able to answer all our own problems, deal with all our own issues, and it's all about me. It is not. It's a situation of cooperation and connection, and as I say, we sometimes really need the good counsel and the good wisdom of others, because our consciousness at times doesn't have enough space. The issue, the pressure, the story, the history is having such impact, it's a little bit like having one's own hand too close to the eyes. We just can't see the lines. We can't see what's going on. And that's a real anguish and difficulty. But another, because she or he is not involved in that, they have some space. And with good counsel and dialogue, hopefully the clarity will come set, and the person has then got some space around the event, and these are the lines of the hand, these are the fingers. I see that how all this comes together. But when it's like that, can't see anything. So it's a recognition of, and it's a process of what you and I can work with and handle, and also when we need, as I say, the good counsel of others. The other, again, there's no hierarchy in the meditation. It's not a progressive development from one level to a lower level to a higher level. That is not in the thinking whatsoever. Sometimes it is valuable and very valuable there that we expand out the awarenesses, and in that expansion out, in any of the postures, we might, in the expansion, be expand out to give more receptivity to what is around. And so in, say, the sitting posture, as an example, we might purposefully open the attention out. So we just check, we feel pretty steady, we feel pretty still and pretty present. Then we open the attention out, and through the senses, we expand our connection with the world, the immediate world, that is, which is around us, and we might just listen. We might just listen. And a listening meditation in the silence is not easy. And so sometimes we are listening, and we might be hearing, as one person was mentioning to me, the birds of the day. And the birds flying around, and I'm sure if we teachers could organize it, we'd have more birds flying around and some more songs to us with the birds singing to us, for God's sake, wake up. And or in the actual listening as well, we might be listening, and what we listen to is people in the hall snoring, farting, fidgeting, and breathing heavily, and all of those reminders to be in the here and now. And so sometimes it's not easy there, in which one ear is for the birds and the other is for the devils in the room. And can we just stay steady in the face of just the act of the listening? Is it valuable and precious practice? Since in daily life, many of the challenges that we face, as we've been hearing with the inquiries, many of the challenges that we face is because of what we listen to. That's why we practice. Because of what we listen to. And the Buddha's friends, he never used the word Shila or Sadak, which means disciple, were frequently referred to. They say, these are the Shravanas, these are the ones who listen. They were known as the ones who listen. And that was very much a part of their practice. So our meditations, learning to be clear and steady, listening to what's going on in the room, listening to the birds of the day outside of the room, and finding a steadiness with that. So in just to summarize very quickly here, there's the mindfulness of the breathing. There's attention to the whole body. There is attention to parts of the body, especially those painful regions there. There is the recognition of the mind state. Sometimes that can be more subtle, and the subtlety of that might be more attention to the feeling. Sometimes in the feelings there, there can be the cultivation of the friendship, the kindness, the acts of forgiveness to ourselves and to others, and all of that can come out of a sensitive feeling life. Times it's the thought which has pulled our attention. And just as we say to see body as body, we need to remind ourselves quite clearly at times, a thought is just a thought. It's no more and it's no less. And sometimes that statement needs to come in our meditations extremely clearly, so that we don't intensify and exaggerate the thought, which then inhibits the clarity. A thought is just a thought. So breath, body, states of mind, thought, feelings, and that expansive awareness that I just referred to. It's not always easy to know which is appropriate. All that we can say is, at the beginning of the meditation, as much as possible, either keep with one or two there, just to develop that. As we engage more regularly in these meditations, both sitting, walking, standing and reclining, we will begin to sense and know for ourselves which is useful, beneficial and to be applied. And that applies to breath, body, states of mind, feeling and thought, including heart feeling there, and an expansive awareness. All of this contributes significantly to a clarity, to a clear comprehension in life, to a real waking up, and to be living in a world full of infinite potential. So let's have a quiet period, shall we?